What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. This episode 380, broken up into two parts, A and B.
A.
B.
380A, posting on 430, will be a discussion on the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, and 380B, posting on 5-3, will be a discussion on Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, which we're looking at you, Netflix, for our motto. We just hope it doesn't suck, because you somehow make that our motto, and you make it matter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. I don't understand it. But I'm one of your hosts, Grayson Maxwell. Joining me, as every week, my co-host, Roger Stillian and Chris Bond. How are we, guys? What's going on?
Good, yes.
Yeah, we are good today.
I hear, Chris, you are running a fever. How's that?
Yeah, feel? I'm fucking faking it till I make it. I don't feel good. I got a fever. Yeah, it is what it is. But you know what? The show goes on.
The show must go on.
But from a distance, remotely, because I don't want to be in a 6x9 space with Roger getting him sick. So
that's far bigger than that in this room.
Is it?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Come on. That's like a 6x9 is like small for a jail cell, I think. That's bigger than a jail cell.
I mean, I don't know.
But speaking of jail cells, you know that
weird segue.
I watched an episode this morning while I was eating my eggs and my drinking coffee of it's called Unlocked on Netflix, about opening up a wing of a jail and letting all the convicts have like a community and not so they're 24 hours a day. It's open. They could just roam freely from cell to cell, and they go out in the yard and do whatever they want to do. And like, I'm actually kind of like, it grabbed me. It's interesting stuff. So yeah, I don't know if you guys ever seen that on Netflix, but
it's a fairly new thing. Yeah, I find that interesting. Did you guys ever, back in the day, this is a while ago, ever see a show called The Colony?
I did. Yes.
Yeah, okay. I remember. It didn't
it was
do
on
very
long, Discovery long, or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it had like two seasons or something, and season two was like abysmally bad. But the first season of that, like, I don't know, I liked it, but you could tell it was like 90% scripted or 80% scripted and staged. But like, there was like some elements that didn't feel that way. I thought that I kind of dug that, you know what I mean? And like when you said that, Grayson, that's what it reminds me of, like just people getting together and surviving, because that's what The Colony was supposed to like emulate. So
I mean, they're not surviving; they're allowed to not be in their cell. I don't know how that's the same, but
well, I mean, like, so I mean, there's other caveats there that I'm sure the show covers, like, you know, is there any guard presence, you know, all this other stuff.
No, there's not. It's really
well, then
it's weird. And it's like they manufacture drama when they don't have to, and I understand that. And like, also, like, why are there's camera people roaming freely around these very dangerous that doesn't make any sense either. But well, there's obviously people and security present. They're just trying to make a show, and I get that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. As long as they're still all inside of a box in some capacity, does it really matter what they do in there?
Well, no, but I mean, you're exposing people who camera op and sound op and to the violent criminals that could very well snap. And I mean, look, obviously it doesn't happen because Netflix wouldn't aired it, but I'm just saying it just seems weird to me. But
well, like, I think you two are kind of talking past each other at the moment. Like I think what Roger's saying is like the overarching theme, like, if you know, if they're not hurting nobody, you know, why not let them just kind of do their thing?
Yeah. I don't care what they do inside their box. It's slightly larger than their old box.
That's fair.
Speaking of,
still contained, right?
Yeah. Speaking of going from a small box to a new larger box, that could be weird and out of context. But I'm looking for a larger box currently because my home is getting too small. So that was part of my week. Looking around, doing the thing.
That's always exciting. Seeing how much money you're going to have to spend soon.
Yeah.
That's not exciting at all.
I know. That's a joke. Yeah. Yeah. Women are looking at that like, okay, good. We need to expand for our family. And the man's like, God damn it. There's
son of a bitch.
My money gone.
I'm the one that budgets.
That wasn't really bad. Okay. Might have sounded really bad. I'm just saying, like,
I think it was great.
No.
Just the two different perspectives. All I'm saying. I'm not saying one makes money and one doesn't. I'm just saying there's two different perspectives, a way to look like that.
I mean, it sounded like you said exactly one person makes money and the other one.
Oh, yeah, no, like it's the no point could a partner ever have equal share.
I did not mean that. I did not at all mean that. I need to make that very clear. I didn't mean that.
You have to make it clear to me. You already did.
I might just say this whole segment. I don't know.
No, you better not.
I don't know. The past couple weeks, I've had to delete a lot of stuff that. I think it makes the show tighter. Anyway. Yeah, so I can't. that task, and I've never bought a house. I've looked at some, but like that's got to be the most daunting task.
You know, so it was at one time, right? Yeah, I was gonna say like now, like so the first couple of times it feels that way, but like now it's just, you know, the idea, like Roger said, it's soul sucking. It's like, God, this is gonna be a 3-month process if it all goes through right. I hope it does. Hope the seller doesn't pull out and get cold feet, not want to sell their, like there's all this shit that goes into it that it's a headache thing. So it's not nearly best like case stressful. Scenario,
legitimately, we are recording this on Sunday, April 28th. Mm-hmm. Okay. So best case scenario, say Chris and his family find the perfect house tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's within their budget or close enough. You know, they come to an agreement. And then boom, like this 60-day window now opens, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
When there's like 50 fucking things that can happen between now and that 60 days that put all of this into the garbage can.
Yep.
Things, it's just this hilarious.
Some things that are in your control, some things that are not in your control, some things that neither party want to happen, mm-hmm. but they sometimes do. Yep.
Well, I mean, you got to schedule a mandatory inspection within mm-hmm. 14 days and blah, 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 blah.
Oh my God, that sounds like a nightmare. Jeez,
it's a process, and it's not really that bad, but it's like any one of those pieces can break the whole puzzle. Mm-hmm. So
that's shame because like I did this not too back in late September, early October, when I came home from Atlanta on Bad Boys, I was looking at a house that my sister and I were going to buy. And we loved it, and we thought it was great. And then, like, we really got into it. And I took my he came to visit to see the house, and like we took my brother up, and he's got a lot of background in like structural engineering when it comes to houses, and like he's going through this checklist of stuff. He's like, guys, this is bad. Like and then we had someone inspect it. The inspector's like, there's about $100,000 worth of stuff you need to fix before anyone's going to sign off, before this house is even like, I don't remember how that was chucked down, but somehow the buyer somehow the seller was like, that's all your responsibility. I'm just trying to get rid of the house.
Yep.
So I was like, well,
that's absolutely something you can do too. Be like, hey, I don't care if you don't like it. Don't buy it then.
As is in the contract, sir.
Yeah, it was a perfect house that, like, one that my sister and I always, like, wanted, and she was going to move back home, and it's just, like, the perfect. And then we had an inspector look at it. He's like, there's some pretty considerable damage to this you might want to consider before shelling out for or applying for a loan, because it's a lot of money to fix. Yeah.
Yep.
So I understand that a little bit. But anyway, so, yeah, that's a very arduous process. I don't I wish you luck in that process, Chris. That's not an easy process. But I'm sure you guys will find the best house for you.
This has been For the Love of House Hunters on Spotify.
Another thing is I did, Roger, and I know neither one of you responded to any of my texts yesterday, but I did watch
Pulp Fiction? I mean, what do you want to say? Go do heroin? I mean,
no, it was a really cool – and it's funny how every time I watch them, especially when I'm in an auditorium with people who have no idea what's coming, and because the guy up front asks, he's like, well, who's seeing this for the first time?
Oh, God.
And a couple people raise their hand, and he's like, oh, boy, you're in for a treat, let me tell you. And I knew, look, we all know what he's referring to, the basement. We all know what he's referring to.
I mean, or the overdose. Or
any number of things, sure.
There's plenty of things.
There's a couple things in Pulp Fiction to kind of be like, oh, man.
But that was great. Let me ask you something about that. Can that movie be made today?
Not how it is right now.
I think you could get close, honestly. If you think about Pulp Fiction, you know, the people that quote-unquote, you know, like, you know, that you follow, win, or however you want to look at it, like, they're all people that you could still do that with if you made a modern version of it, I think.
Sure.
It's just a couple lines can't make it. A couple things won't make it.
There's a whole segment that probably gets tossed.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like after Marvin gets shot in the face.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, not a whole lot of that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Or I could audibly hear when Bruce goes back downstairs with the samurai sword, opens the door, like, how could you possibly know what's coming when you open that door? And it's like people were like, oh, and I was like, yep, that's exactly the response I was expecting.
Yep.
Wow, that was a cool experience. So I got to, it's great seeing that in like the perfect formatted way on this. It's like, it's brilliant. It's a thing of the past. Yeah, it's super cool. Yeah.
The only thing that turned me off about your picture is like, because like you sent us a photo of of like props that are like Pulp Fiction y.
Oh yeah.
I'm so assuming like, stuff that they gave you, right?
Yeah. All the attendees who were in season.
Yeah, you were some dweeb that brought your own own stuff in there. Okay, gotcha. No, but like the something like irks me about candy cigarettes. I don't know what it is.
Because like, they suck.
Well, not only that, but they feel and look and like the whole idea of them is so tacky and so like fucking 1980s. Like it's like I something about them messes with me. Like it's like ew. I don't want to be near that.
I didn't pay that much attention. Were they just the ones that are just like sugar, or were they the ones with like the shitty gum in the middle that you?
No, I don't know. Actually, I saved the package for you because
that you could like, blow the powdered sugar out of, so it made it look like you actually.
Oh my god! I didn't even know those existed.
You didn't
know
that, so like they made these ones right that were they look like cigarettes. They were just long. Mm-hmm. Thin pieces of like the lowest quality gum you could buy, right?
Yeah, of course.
But inside, like in between the wrapper and the in the gum was like powdered sugar that you could like blow it and it looked like a little puff of smoke came out. What? You could do it like two or three times before it wouldn't puff anymore.
That's wild. You could make Pulp Fiction before you could make a new product like that again.
I mean that's for sure. Now they would just give you crystal meth and be like, here you go.
That is weird. I know, thinking about like the whole concept behind cane cigarette. Like, why would you want to try to popularize something that's absolutely terrible for you?
Because listen, no matter what they tell you, smoking is cool and awesome.
Jesus Christ.
Lord, I might have to cut that. I don't know.
Maybe. Nope.
Listen, nope. All right, guys, let's continue on the show. This is episode 380 of For the Love of Cinema, a podcast about movies, film, and cinema. It's posted each and every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on Podbean, which then distributes to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music. Each and every week, we start with the box office current and upcoming releases, what streaming trailers and movies of the week. Without further ado, let's check out the box office. And a little weird here. Given how far into the year we already are, I expected a little more. But Challengers, remember we talked last week, Challengers is getting rave reviews. Just $15 million domestic, bringing its worldwide to $25 million. That's not awful. I didn't think that movie was going to do that high. But I wonder how much of that is based on the high scores it's getting and some of that, and what of that's based on genuine interest.
Most of it's just Zendaya.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Is what I would.
Number two, Unsung Hero, $7.8 million. 7.8 million worldwide. Remember, that's the film. We saw the trailer once or twice about the family who is a musician family together. I don't know much about it, but
That weird musical one. Mm-hmm. Then we figured out what band they actually were, and then none of us cared enough to go look.
Well, I know I do want to see it. It's just there's so much else out right now, especially with the. I didn't quite get to this weekend. It's been a busy one for me. I didn't get to Alien or Mummy, and I want to do that this week before they're gone. I definitely would like to see those again. Godzilla Cross Kong the New Empire, another 7.2 with a worldwide of 519. That's still trickling in some money. Civil War, 7 million with a worldwide of 71.6. Good for A24. What did you say the budget for that was? 50?
50.
50. It is the highest grossing A24 movie of all time. Good. As of this day.
Good, so. Good. Number five is Abigail, the one about the vampire. The little vampire girl, 5.3 million.
Vampire ballerina girl.
Yes, that's the one. And 28.6 worldwide. Not doing great, but who made that? Was that Blumhouse?
Yes.
It kind of sounds Blumhouse is doing worse these days. But I don't want to make these big sweeping.
Well, I mean, like think about what Abigail came out against, though. You know, you still have Godzilla Kong as an option.
Yeah,
Civil War came out, which we knew was gonna take. You know. Things from other movies just because of like the idea of the film. So like it came out against, and there's like two more things that you're about to mention. Like there are things around it.
I also don't like the fact that it came out with what's the one that wasn't the bear, the imaginary. Yeah. That's, I don't like, I mean, maybe people, because if you remember that's one that we didn't talk about. I did watch it, but we didn't talk about it. It's about the one that I didn't find it particularly scary either, to be honest with you. I kind of agreed with him. I didn't think it was, I thought it was just kind of a weird 90-minute movie that didn't really do anything, but that's just me. 6 through 10, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. That's a shame. It's in the second weekend, it's down that much, but it dropped 56%. So Number 7, Kung Fu Panda 4. 8, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Dune, Part Dune, as Roger calls it, still making some money. That's number 8. Sorry, number 9. And Boy Kills World is number 10. Dune, Part Dune is sitting at, 704. 700. So it did cross the 700 mark. Good for good.
Abigail, I'm sorry, I was mistaken. Abigail is not a Blumhouse. However, it is distributed by you. Well, I saw Universal and just assumed it was Blumhouse. It is not.
Yes,
I did the same thing. Alien has made 1.5 worldwide. The re-release of Alien, The Mummy's right below it at just over a million. So that always, like, I don't understand how people. That's how I know there's like less cinephiles in the world than claim to be. Is those are two very popular for their time movies that are excellent movies. That just, why are people not interested in seeing those on the big screen? Now probably because people have TVs that mimic. You know, I understand the concept, but. Seeing Pulp Fiction in the theater is way better than I've ever seen it on any TV I've ever watched it on.
Yeah, but okay, so I have an honest opinion about this, right? I think you're halfway correct. The other half is, and I'm not saying this as like ironically, it's streaming, I think, because before you had to own the movie, go buy it, blah, blah, blah. And that's how you can watch on your nice big TV or your projector, however you're going to watch like your the movie you're really into at home. But now, most of the time, if you think of a movie you want to watch, it's probably on a streaming service if it's an older film, right?
Here's the thing. If it's popular enough to get a movie re-release in theater,
yeah, it's somewhere already streaming. Out there.
Yeah.
So I think that takes from that because it's like, you know, you're right. TVs are huge now that, you know, they're so much better in quality than what they used to be. And you have streaming platforms that probably have the movie you're going to watch, you know, or like, you know, one of the two you have probably has a good amount of options to where like going to see them in the theater is a hassle. It costs money. And all you got to do is turn on a streaming service you already have a subscription to.
Well, The Mummy is available to rent on Amazon, only to rent. It's not anywhere. And I imagine Alien's probably the same way, although Alien might be on Disney Plus. I know that's a weird thing to say, but it is, you know, that's for Fox. So it doesn't say Alien's available to only available. Oh, it's on Hulu, or you can rent it. So I can understand why the argument against it. The big screen to me is still the draw. The big screen, the big sound.
Oh yeah, no, I get you. I understand.
I'm gonna make the argument later this year too. I have I got a pretty rad interview planned. I've already confirmed it. At least right now he's confirmed. To talk about. I think what I think is going to be one of those. I know I make these sweeping statements about cinephiles. I don't think there's as many out there that claim to be. Is like Gladiator 2 to me is like one of those movies that if you don't see it opening week or opening 2 weeks, like how can you possibly say the following and be true? I love movies. Because Gladiator is one of those movies that fucking took the world by storm and it was amazing.
Well, yeah, but don't forget. Like movies, like they follow culture as well, right?
So sure, and I get
at
that.
At this point, you know, the people that are like super into Alien and super into, you know, The Mummy probably aren't, you know, the majority of people going to theaters anymore at this point anymore either.
Sure, and I get that, but I mean, there's Alien Romulus, which I think is a big deal, and Gladiator 2 is one of those things that they're not, either one of those movies is going to do. I don't think Aliens can even going to blip the needle. I got to be honest. And I hope Gladiator does something. I fear for the film industry because movies like this, if can't get a draw that once did, then I mean, this whole thing with Marvel, like it's going to end soon and other things are going to have to start making money. So we'll see anyway, but that's just what I wanted to, I have an interesting episode planned for that. But I'm really excited for Gladiator 2 and Alien Romulus as well. So very excited for both. I hope you are true to a listener. I hope you are as well. Let's talk about some current and upcoming releases. Now here's, we talked about this a little bit before we started shooting, but this past Friday, Alien re-released, The Mummy re-released, and Challengers, which is doing very well. May 3rd, The Fall Guy and the re-release of Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. And May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is, I hope, going to be rad. Not Another Church Movie and We Grown Now goes wider. The 17th of May, Back to Black and If Imaginary Friends and The Strangers, Chapter 1. May 24th, Furiosa, A Mad Max Saga and The Garfield Movie. May 31st, Ezra, Summer Camp and Young Woman in the Sea. Those are three movies, not one title. June opens, we'll stop here, but June opens strong, I think, with Bad Boys, Ride or Die. Really excited for that. Run, Lola, Run, and The Watchers. And then next week is Pixar's Inside Out 2, which I also think is going to have a decent, very decent draw. At least I hope so. So there's not much has changed with regard to what's coming out. And let's take a look at what's streaming this week in our rotation is Disney Plus. I chose this one. I haven't talked about this one in a while. You guys are going to be surprised. Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. And Roger, I think you, of the two of you, may agree with me, although Chris, you also may have a strong opinion one way or the other about this is the only great one, I would imagine. Most people would consider this great by director Gore Verbinski, Johnny Depp.
It's the first one, right?
Yeah, this is the first one. Johnny Depp, Orlando Bloom, Keira Knightley, Jeffrey Rush, Jack Davenport, Jonathan Pryce, to name a few. From 2003, I really thought this movie was excellent when I first saw it. It relit the imagination for the pirate stuff, which had been dead for years and years. I thought that the Johnny Depp character of Captain Jack Sparrow was great. I thought he was funny and interesting. I thought this movie should have been a one-off. when I saw the sequels, which admittedly I will say I love because of the whole thing with Will and Elizabeth, I loved it. I just think they were considerably weaker. The story wasn't there, and it just kind of lost the potency of whatever the Curse of the Black Pearl had. It was small scale. It was just this movie made from a ride that just kind of caught fire, and I loved it. I think that movie's excellent. How do you guys feel about the other movies compared to Curse of the Black Pearl? I'm not even talking about 4 and 5, which absolutely suck. But
I think Black Pearl's a great movie, honestly. Yeah. Like, I love it.
Hot take. I think this is the weakest of the three.
Are you kidding me?
I just do.
That's fair. I don't mean to act so surprised. I mean, that's
fair. Hold on. I won't question it because you can have your own opinion. I will say I am surprised by that opinion.
As am I.
It's why I said hot take, right? I knew it.
It's a little spicy.
Yep. I do go in. But like, so I think the second one is the best one of the three. And then I have a weird soft spot for the third movie because Keira Knightley gives that speech near the end of it, rallying the troops. And that did something to my young adult brain. I don't know. I really like that moment. So it is what it is.
I gave you all the tingles and jingles. I don't think it's a
seminal moment.
Yeah.
I still think the Kristen Stewart speech in Snow White and the Huntsman is better. I know we've talked about
this.
And maybe one day we could do an episode on these two speeches, but I understand what you're saying. And I do agree with you that those, I spent the third one more than the second one has a special place because even though it's absolutely world breaking, stupid, doesn't make any sense. That fight in the whirlpool, I just think is cool as hell. It works. You know, it's again one of those things like, why are all the bad guys dying but none of the good guys are dying? How are they all standing up straight when those two ships are almost at a 45 degree fucking angle in a fucking whirlpool? Nothing makes any goddamn sense. It's just. I do think it's some of those story elements in those first three movies are, I think the first one's the strongest. That's my personal opinion. I didn't mean to act so surprised when you were like,
no, it's all good. I get it. It's like I said, I came in knowing that I was going to be in the minority.
I think some of those story elements, strong story elements do carry over and are in the second and third film. One of the moments in the third film that I always remember, like it always like, God, it's really well done is when they're coming back from the Davy Jones locker getting
the upside down or over the right. Yeah.
And then,
fight the Demogorgon
is down. Is when they're coming back and they're sailing at night and they're talking about how, and then they start to see things float by the ship and Will sees her father and he's like, oh, we must be back. And then one of the only serious moments that Jack Sparrow has in that last movie, he's like, Elizabeth, we're not back. And then you realize that he's dead and it's just,
that's a great moment.
But I wish the tone had been a little more serious in the second and third film because the whole – they really went hog wild with like making the Jack Sparrow character kind of a joke. I just wish it had been a little more of a less comical of a tone and more serious. But that's just my personal thing. But I thought the first movie was pretty excellent.
Yeah, I got you.
I forget which one of you guys chose this, but kudos to you.
It's such a good pick. It's such a good pick.
Toaster. Oh, dude, it's strong. And it's me. Thank you very much.
Brave Little Toaster by director Jerry Reese, John Lovitz, Timothy Stack, and Deanna Oliver, to name a few. 1987.
Like, look, if you want a movie that will traumatize children more so than just about anything else in its time, let me introduce you to the Brave Little Toaster. All right? Like, do you remember how sad it was?
This was my brother's favorite, like, kids movie growing up for the longest time. Like, we watched the shit out of this.
So I watched this movie probably 1,000 times.
Oh, man.
Kid, right?
Yep.
So,
like, there's a part in Brave Little Toaster, and if you've never seen it, like, it's got, you know, it's like animation that's very typical of the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, there's a little bit of song, a little bit of fun, but like, there's like the sequence where they get out in the woods, and like, there's an electric blanket that
the blankie blow it away.
Blankie. When he, like, they use him as a tent, and he's like wrapped around a branch, like making like a little teepee style, mm-hmm. or a little lean-to style tent. And during the storm, Blanky gets sucked off into the storm, and he's just gone.
Gone.
He's fucking gone. And like, there's no resolution. He doesn't come back.
The trauma is real.
I think Roger was traumatized. He's never really gotten over it.
By the like, yes.
I agree with you. And many kids will be. That's one of my things. Is like, I think it's funny when I say, "How do I know you're too young?" Well, if you don't see Pluto as a planet, you're too young. And also, if you don't know what the Brave Little Toaster is, you're too damn young, because that movie is traumatized. But so many movies around that time did that. Yep. You remember? I remember. Yeah.
Well,
my dad go ahead.
Notoriously, the biggest one right before, a couple years before that, was the Transformers movie.
Oh, right, right.
Like the original animated movie, mm-hmm. which did gangbusters money for, like, you know, kids that were my age and that demographic at the time, where Optimus Prime fucking dies.
Yep.
Like, the guy who was the indestructible leader of the good guys dies. Like, kids were crying their eyes out.
So that only did Transformers 1984. It only has the worldwide box office at 619,000.
Yeah, but back then, though, for a kid's movie,
there's no way that's an accurate number.
I don't. That's all. Box Office Mojo has recorded. But I looked at that recently, and I was like, "That's why I thought." I was like, "I don't think Roger's right about that." But I wouldn't think that's an accurate number. But that's also right in the day in the '80s when people, when adults, even if they like Transformers, would have been like, "It's a cartoon."
Yeah. Exactly. Well, like, I mean, people still do that now.
Sure.
But I think you mentioned, you know, that, like, not many movies are as sad as this one. I think the only two that I would put this movie up against for, like, traumatic moments for kids to, like, send your kids to therapy for sure is going to be Land Before Time, the first one.
I was just going to say that.
Oh, like, yeah. No,
that listen, man. There's a specific, like, age range of people that when you start playing the the music when Littlefoot's mom's dying, it just hits everybody.
Dude, it just rips your heart out, man.
And then All Dogs Go to Heaven is also
All Dogs Go to Heaven.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one too. Like, man, movies back then were rough for kids.
Well, no, but there were stories that they wanted to tell great stories. Unlike kids' movies today, they just don't seem to. I don't think they do, but. I thought about that. I've read some articles about why the 80s movies and early 90s movies are so goddamn sad. And I really do think it's – none of the articles are willing to take a stance, but I really do – it's just the quality of writing was better. And I'm glad you bring up the Optimus thing, because, Roger, I imagine someone who wrote – the people who wrote that were like me, like, oh, let's kill him. You know, that's how you
– sell more toys.
Well, of course, yes.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of, like, you know, people at the higher up level, you know, handing out their candy cigarettes to kids as they walk into doors, going, "Let's traumatize these little bastards." You know what I mean? Like, that's probably what's happening.
Good call, The Land Before Time. That one just guts me every time.
I don't want to, like, derail this much longer, but there is one other thing about the Transformers movie, and similar to Brave Little Toaster, is because in the Transformers movie, when Optimus Prime dies, the other Hasbro film that they were working on at the time, the G.I. Joe animated movie, which came out 6 months later. Okay. They legitimately had to rewrite the ending because Duke, who is the leader of the G.I. Joes and in the cartoon anyway, he was supposed to die. Jesus. And, like, they didn't reanimate the scene. They just redid the voice and be like, "Oh, Duke's alive. Yay." Like, it's all off screen.
they saw this, like, Transformers movie. They're like, fuck. No, they did first.
Yeah, they got such backlash for it. They did. Well, no, they're the same company. So, like, they knew what was coming.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, they decided to not destroy the youth anymore.
That's great, man. We could do a whole episode on, like, kids' movies that gutted us when we were little.
Jacked up kids' movies, yeah.
I love it. I'm so glad you brought the Land Before Time. Like, that's a movie that, like, I just...
You know, there's 20 of those things.
I know.
Right?
Oh, yeah, God, yeah. But Land Before Time and Brave Little Toaster are just ones that I know my parents had to buy two or three VHSs because almost every day after school, my brother and I would just plump down and watch those and all the Disney films. But Brave Little Toaster was Cameron's favorite. Mine was Land Before Time. So yep. Yeah, two that just got me every time. Let's switch gears a little bit, guys. Talk about Chris's pick, which is Avengers Infinity War by directors Anthony and Joe Russo.
Small movie.
Small little movie. Made a few bucks. Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, to name a few, and Josh Brolin. 2018. Chris, you're a bigger fan of this than you are the sequel, I think, right?
Oh, I am, 100%. I'll be quick on this one because we ran over with the other two, right? So, and mine's far less interesting. This is my favorite Marvel movie of all time. I think this movie, as a Marvel product, really does everything the best. I know Endgame is also like really high up there, but like something about this movie for me as a viewer, I like the hopelessness that Thanos brings, against the Avengers. The entire time Thanos is on screen, he steals the show. He is imposing. He is daunting. All these things. He's just a force of absolute negative energy towards everyone that's around him, and it feels so good to watch it play through. It's like a very like just sad movie disguised as a hero movie film for me. I love the way that it's set up. There's actual like stakes and sacrifice and things that happen that don't get undone. Like there's just so much in this film that's actually interesting, and is when Marvel was at its height, the pinnacle of its storytelling processes. And I don't know, I just think it's worth your watch if you still haven't seen it, or maybe if you forgot about how good it was because you think Endgame is the only thing that matters at that point. Go rewatch Infinity War and tell me it isn't a fantastic showing.
It is, yeah. And everyone hates Star-Lord in that movie.
Listen, there ain't a person that goes, maybe he was right. No, we all know he was wrong.
Who made the right decision? No one says that.
No one has said that.
Maybe that's where my dislike of Chris Pratt starts. Mm-hmm. Like he almost destroyed the universe. Jeez Louise.
Oh yeah. No, like I mean, Thanos has one of my favorite lines. Well, he has a lot of my favorite lines in both movies. But when he looks at I can't remember who he's fighting, but he looks at him. He goes, I don't even know who you are.
Drax.
Like,
it's Drax.
Yeah, it's Drax. Drax. Yeah, yeah.
When he gets the reality stitch.
Isn't it Scarlet Witch?
It's Drax. Mm-mm. Because he tells him, he's like, you killed my family, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I don't even know who you are.
Yep, it's just like, oh, it's such a good line, too. Well,
I'm pretty sure he said it's a Scarlet Witch when she says, you took everything from me. He says, I don't even know who. I'm pretty sure it's Scarlet Witch.
No, so that's in Endgame, he says something similar to Scarlet Witch, yeah.
Okay, okay. I don't even know who you are part. I'm pretty sure he says, what you're thinking of, I think he says something else to Drax, but I don't know. I'll have to watch him again and find out.
Oh, maybe like, but again, he has a lot of good lines, and it's just so good.
All the way around. Solid, very solid choice. Let's talk about some trailers really quick. Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm going to let you guys take them because I know you guys love it. Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds, Emma Corrin, Marina Baccarin, Rob Delaney, Karen Soni, Jennifer Garner, Josh Brolin, Patrick Stewart, Jason Fleming. It's a feature. Real quick, I would just like to say I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on this show that thought he'd be back in the Wolverine. They'd bring him back for Wolverine because, hey, you just don't write out Hugh Jackman. He's too good of an actor.
I mean, let's be honest. We all agreed that with enough money, you know, most likely.
Everybody comes back.
But also, the circumstances, it's not like he's coming back for just any Marvel, any Fox X-Men film. He's coming back specifically because Ryan Reynolds wanted him on this.
No, and I get it, but he's still back in the suit. Also, RDJ, I know you guys both took a hard stance, but I hear rumors that RDJ is... Josh Brolin's coming back for some reason in that story. So I imagine RDJ...
Josh Brolin was in two Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Oh, he's coming back. He's another version of Thanos, but it's still Thanos. I've also heard rumors of RDJ as well. So I'm like, of course he'll be back. You can't look at what they have now.
This week said, he'd listen if they wanted him or something.
But anyway, I'm a huge fan of Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm a huge fan of the other two Deadpool films. I hope this movie does very well, just because I want it to succeed.
Same, very much so. I'm interested to see what the final product is because of all the development issues that this had between Ryan Reynolds and whoever heads Disney right now, Bob Iger. Is that who it is? Yeah.
Yep.
So, like, I'm interested to see what the final product is because I know there was a lot of back and forth between those two that wasn't friendly in this process. But I don't know. I get to see my Hugh Jackman again as my Wolverine, and I'll enjoy every minute of that.
Intended.
Exactly. I'll enjoy it immensely the whole time I'm watching it.
So. I agree. I'm very excited. And the popcorn bucket. Are you guys gonna try to get one of those popcorn buckets?
Yes. Have they shown what it is yet?
Yes, we showed. It's his mouth in the popcorn.
No. I think it actually says that isn't the popcorn.
Oh, it's not it. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, but I think Ryan Reynolds knows when to capitalize on a joke.
Sure. Sure. But I imagine there will be
two things the guy does well: marketing and jokes.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, so I'm down to get that popcorn bug. I don't know if you guys will. Whatever True. It is, I'm sure it's going to be amazing. Let's talk about a movie by M. Night Shyamalan, Josh Hartnett, Haley Mills. It's a feature, Trapped. What are we thinking about this?
So, I think the twist is going to be interesting in this because we already know who the actual the villain is. So, I wonder where the twist is.
Pretty good idea where it is.
Yeah, yeah. It's fairly obvious. You really can't miss it with the way that they're setting it up. So, I'm really curious on how they're going to have a twist in here. They might not. They might go away from that route, but it's going to be interesting to see what.
Wait, has he ever not had a twist?
I don't know.
I don't. Is this Shyamalanian or is this his son?
It's him.
Okay.
I understand.
Gotcha.
Wait, but the last Airbender didn't have a twist, but that was also
that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, a whole different thing.
Here's the thing. You know what? Honestly, because I kind of dig the premise.
Same.
Right. I think it's interesting. You know, where if you didn't see the trailer, so this guy, a normal guy, Josh Hartnett actually is taking his daughter to whatever, some sort of supergroup / Taylor Swift concert ish, mm-hmm. right? That's what it's supposed to be, a big time event. And it turns out they're not letting anybody back out during the show. They have all the doors and stuff barricaded by the police.
Yep.
Because he's a serial killer and they're looking, they got a hot tip that the guy would be there. And the guy's just playing it straight and he's looking at his phone, or somebody kidnapped in his basement or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think the idea behind that, this could be a really good suspense movie.
Yep.
And I honestly think, M. Night's not had the best run, obviously.
Not of recent, no.
Yeah. If he had one that was a straight shot and it was just a good suspense / horror-ish movie, I think that would probably suit him well. Now, listen, I know it'll probably have a weird twist. But it doesn't have to. I think his trailer's cool. I dug it.
Yeah. So M. Night, he's had Knock at the Cabin, which we didn't hate actually. Knock at the Cabin wasn't terrible.
No, okay, that was okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's his most recent film.
We didn't like old.
Yeah. Old was fucking weird, right?
It was just weird. Yeah.
Glass was before it, which that has issues. Split
was badass.
Good. Yeah. And then you have we have The Visit, After Earth, Devil, Last Airbender. Yeah, he's got a long list of, he's got more misses than hits, right? But
Devil's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Okay is okay then, though, yeah. Right? You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
Okay. When I say okay is it's not terrible, which is not a way to, never mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the motto of our own show, I just hope it doesn't suck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. That's good enough. But it's just, I would like to see this do well. You know what I mean? I have to watch it. B, it's, I like a good twist, right? I want the Shyamalan twist to be a thing. You know what I mean? I don't want it to be something that's always made fun of now and kind of seen as a, I wonder how this movie's going to disappoint me because it tries to set something up. I want to just enjoy the film, be like, holy crap, and, be taken aback by what I see.
When was the last time you felt like that?
M. Night Shyamalan specifically or in any product?
Any product, really.
Any product? You're going to laugh at me because it's things you guys haven't seen, but it was in Cyberpunk 2077.
Oh, the show on Netflix.
Yeah, okay, on Netflix. Yeah, yeah, the last episode is absolutely jaw-dropping, and there's something that happens near the end, and it was just took the fucking wind out of you, abruptly, and then it moves on like nothing happened. It's insane, the setup and payoff of that moment. So
that's probably better than my example. I was going to say Damsel.
Oh my goodness. All right, moving on from that, let's move on to Dead Wrong real quick. Spend 2 minutes. Dead Wrong is Derek Smith and Rob Schneider. Here's the thing about Dead Wrong is when I was trying to post this, I was trying to get a million things done. I wanted to post it. I saw what I thought in the trailer was Ana de Armas.
Was a good film?
No, I thought I saw it. Well, I mean, she's not going to be anything that's going to be terrible. So
it looks like Ana de Armas in the thumbnail.
It does. And I posted the trailer, and it's just some weird, looks like the budget of $4 million. Rob Schneider's the biggest name, and that's a problem. But it's I don't Jesus.
Shout out to Rob Schneider.
I don't mean it again. I don't mean it in a bad way.
In terms of Hollywood clout, yeah. that's a problem.
I agree, but this also does like some of the thing where someone's like, I wonder if you're wrong, and then like the screen flashes and, like wrong, pass, like lights up all over the screen. Like, what is this from 2002? What is this?
No, it looks like that movie was filmed in our podcast studio.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with the studio, which I'm the only one in tonight, but you know, probably could have done a little bit better. It looks like here's the thing: it looks like a low level soap opera, and that is not a
compliment. That's a shot.
That's bad.
God.
That's bad.
So I don't really know what to think about that, but I mean, all those are available to watch on our social media: Deadpool and Wolverine, Trapped, and Dead Wrong.
We had two excellent trailers, and then that.
You're welcome.
Hey, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, baby.
I thought it was Anna de Armas.
I can't even find the budget for Dead Wrong.
I'm sure it's not. Well, Chet Hanks is in it. Tom Hanks' other son, the one that we know.
The other son.
Chet Hanks.
It is. He's the son we never hear about. Am I wrong? When was the last time you saw Chet Hanks in anything?
Now, he was just in something fairly recently, right?
Okay.
But it wasn't anything like famous.
Mm. Well, let's switch gears real quick and talk about the movie of the week, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Let's talk about it.
Let's do that.
Let's go indeed.
All right, here we go. All right, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, Rotten Tomatoes, 71, an audience score. You guys want to take a guess?
Feels like an 80.
It is a 92.
Whoa.
Audience score.
Whoa.
I know.
All right.
And the Metacritic, fairly lower. It's 57. So there's a big discrepancy between audience and meta, and then the Rotten Tomatoes score. Big discrepancy there, which I think makes it somewhat interesting. But let's talk about it. Roger, what's the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare about?
Okay, so before I give a quick little recap, I do want to make a statement about this movie. I thought this movie was fucking awesome. Like, I really did enjoy it, basically, from start to finish. I thought it was pretty rad. But so this is based off of a true story that was found in Winston Churchill's classified documents that were just very recently declassified. And this is where that story came from. But yeah, like, I love this movie. I thought it was great. So it's a story about them, you know, one of the first covert missions in Britain's like war history for World War II. So,
yep. Well, so like I heard something about this not recently, but like probably in like the last couple of months. So probably like something about this movie coming out soon, right? Was adjacent to it. But they talked about how one of the ways that Churchill really like led well during World War II was the fact that he made the decision to fight kind of the way that he did, because Germany, Hitler, expected them to fight warfare in the way it's always been fought and do it all face to face and, you know, like borderlines to borderlines kind of deal. He didn't expect, especially, you know, Churchill's forces to do anything underhanded, ungentlemanly, all that kind of thing. Like it just wasn't the expectation back then and at that time. And the fact that they went that way was surprising to multiple nations, and it's one of the reasons why things went, you know, eventually turned positive within that time frame.
Sure, started to swing things back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it was never going to be. It was always going to swing back. It's just a matter of time. That's my whole thing is, I find it that period of time in history to be fascinating.
Oh yeah,
it's a fascinating study of human history. I don't mean any disrespect to anyone who might take offense. I'm just saying I think personally it's a fascinating study in what people do to other people. It's just,
I mean, there's people with like full historian degrees that are based only in World War II.
Sure,
so like,
sure.
It's nothing negative to say that, because
it's like it's a wild 10 years in history.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yes.
So I just wanted to say I haven't watched a movie in a long time where I actually like wished I was watching the movie like with you guys in the theater with me.
Oh yeah.
Like, so, like it doesn't happen very often. I like my alone time. I like getting to a nice empty theater, like one or two people in it. I know I can, like, you know, just kind of relax and enjoy the film. But like watching this movie, like I was like, man, like this is just a movie about the boys doing their thing, right?
Dudes doing dude
like
stuff.
Dudes doing dude stuff, killing other dudes, man. Like I never wanted to like sit in the theater and watch a movie with you guys so much as when I watched this film. Like it was cool to see. Like I enjoyed my time with this movie.
I took my dad with me to see this movie.
Oh, hell yeah.
He fucking loved it.
I bet he did.
We went out and we had steaks beforehand.
Oh,
and then,
hell yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
You guys went in with maximum testosterone on top
yes,
of it.
Sir.
Jesus.
We were ribbed up. We got a bar fight on the way. You know, oh, yeah. It was fucking perfect. Actually, the bar fight was after.
Okay, no, yeah, that makes more sense.
So ready to go.
Nah, let's talk about the cast in this, which is actually, I think, fairly formidable with Henry Cavill, Eliza Gonzalez, Alan Ritchson, Henry Golding, Alex Pettifer, to name a few. And also, Cary Elwes, Rory Kinnear, and Hero Finds Tiffin, I wanted to say as well. And that's a very good cast.
It's a solid cast.
I mean, yeah, it's not a cast where you go, man, I don't know where they got these people from. Like,
not like dead wrong. We're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Roger, what did you Schneider.
Rob Schneider in the Guy Ritchie movie.
Yeah, yes. Imagine the tonal shift of this film if Rob Schneider is the guy at the helm, right? Or if Rob Schneider's, what was his name?
Churchill.
Rob Schneider's Churchill. No, like what about who they had to save first? Applesauce, what was his name?
Appleyard.
Yeah. Like imagine that Appleyard was played by Rob Schneider. Like, how that just changes everything.
He's chained up there, and it's just Rob Schneider with the clamps to his nipples. Like, dear God.
If it was Rob Schneider, there would have also been one on his balls too, though.
You know, absolutely.
Of course.
Roger, what did you think of Henry Cavill's mustache on this one?
First off, his fashion sense and style in this movie, fucking impeccable.
Impeccable.
Dude, like when he's like, I got to get me one of those coats.
Yep.
And then you see him walking around with like the Gestapo the officer's coat, and somehow he looks incredible in it.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. It's certainly, I think this movie's better than a 57. It's getting on Metacritic, but.
Well, so, I mean, let's talk about the true star of this show, all right? Let's talk about Alan Ritchson as the Danish guy with the greatest accent, or Swedish guy with the greatest Swedish accent of all time.
Oh, yeah. Like hard Swede, right?
Oh, it's perfection.
Yeah, I don't really know how to feel about Alan Ritchson and something like this, but he does a fine job. There's nothing wrong with Alan Ritchson.
I mean, like, look, there are a few things that I'm convinced that Alan Ritchson, God, that's so hard to say, could do, and most of it involves stabbing someone to death with a knife, because, like, yeah, no, listen. Between this movie and, like, two seasons of Reacher, he's just
a huge fucking mammoth of a man. And he's just ripping people to pieces in this, literally. And he finds many ways to do it. And it's
like he's cutting people's hearts out.
It's violent, too. Like the way when he stabs and rips, like, you know what? He needs to play Doom Guy, honestly, in the Doom movie when it comes out. Because he's ripping and tearing the whole way.
Where's rip and tear?
Fucking yeah.
It's actually not a bad call, even though I don't know if you meant it seriously. But that's not a bad, look.
Listen, I would watch that.
Yeah, right?
Shredding in the background, like,
oh yeah.
You know what I couldn't get out of my head though, and like the whole time I was watching this, wrongs were being broad. This is just Guy Ritchie's version of
Inglourious Bastards.
Inglourious Bastards,
exactly what it is.
So here's the thing: you said that you don't agree with the Metacritic score, right? I think I kind of do, because isn't this movie not as good as Inglourious Bastards?
Probably. I would say it's.
You know what I mean? But it's definitely like it's that movie adjacent, right? It doesn't mean that it's not doing its own thing, and like the movie like is like worse for it in any way. But like, if you were to compare the movie that it admittedly does probably remind a lot of people of, you know, there's one out there that is better. So like, there's no way it can be scored, I think, higher or near that film, right? So I think it makes sense. The movie's fun. The movie's a great time. The movie's a good ride. Like, there's plenty of times where I just with all the killing and all the shots and all the headshots and all the people's bodies exploding, like there was many times where I just went, oh damn, this is cool. But like there's not much beyond that. Good. No, go ahead. You're good.
Well, it's like some of the scenes, like so, three quarters of the way or closer to the end of the movie, like when they're going around and like they're working on the ship heist or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're just walking and talking and they're just mowing people down like so casually. Mm-hmm. Like that felt so cool to me. Like these dudes their heart rate's not even accelerating. There's like brat, brat, brat.
Just business,
like,
man.
Oh yeah, like, and then the guy like stops and lights a cigarette while he's doing it. Like, yeah.
Well, like, there's so many shots, so many shots, and I mean that like literally, and you know, like framing wise, where like someone shoots somebody but never even looks at them. Right? It's just like no 360, no scope, no look. But it's, you know, it's entertaining, and that's what the movie does well. It isn't, you know. Like, there's a lot of times where you're like, well, there's no way, like, you know, you take that shot without looking, right? Like, you know, they want to survive and make it out. But that's like the Guy Ritchie style, you know, stylizing the film and making it fun because the movie's fun. So it's just like as you're going through the film. Yeah. Like the shots you're talking about, Roger, they happen all the time. And the movie just is having a really good time the whole way through. And you can tell, you can feel it. Like, it's definitely the vibe of the film is just, what are these guys gonna fuck up? Because like, yeah. Every time they show up someplace, that's what they do, and it's just it's entertaining.
Well, so, I what you just said, Chris, kind of takes me out of something like this, mm-hmm. only because we have movies, a very recent one in Monkey Man, and you know the John Wick films, and then even before that, the Bourne stuff is. We have examples of it. If it done so well that it never looks hokey, this one, it's one of those things. Do you remember? I know you guys have each. I don't know how experienced you are with this, but you remember Hercules and Xena back in the day?
Oh yeah,
in the 90s.
Yeah.
How when Hercules would fight someone or Xena, they would always all the bad guys would always kind of take turns fighting, like, and then they would get punched and fly back, and then the next guy would step up and get punched. It's just that's the kind of not nearly as bad, but not nearly as bad as an infringement. But that kind of strikes me as here is. There, all many times they're in these fights with these with you know monster closet you know Germans who all have guns who never seem to use the guns to shoot mm-hmm. them at close range.
Yeah,
that kind of takes me out of it a little bit, and I don't know why.
Gun shots that happen in here, but I mean yeah. most of the thing is, and that's one thing. I know it sounds stupid, but most of this movie they do in stealth. And that's why all their weapons are silenced. You know, there's a big elaborate plan that's involved with everything. Like even the part where they get where they have to get Appleyard out, right? Like they make a very meticulous plan for all of it to just go to shit. But it was all based in stealth.
Like they still remain in stealth for a majority of that too.
Every weapon they have is in silence has a silencer on it. I mean. You know, we got Jack Reacher out here rolling around with a goddamn bow and arrow, shooting it all the way through people like with, some sort of monster.
What is the wall strength on that bow? You know what I mean? Like, what is the resistance to
80,000 pounds per square inch?
Because those are going through people's bodies, which is unheard of. The arrows would explode.
It would be fucking gross.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, I mean, obviously, look, it's supposed to be glorified, like, violence, right? Like it's supposed to be centralized and like over the top, but I mean they do it in such a cool way. I mean, like, look, we've seen a bunch of Guy Ritchie movies in the last 4 or 5 years, right, that are all R-rated, super violent, and all kind of have this like cool suave thing going on to it. I mean, think about Wrath of Man for a minute, all right, the Jason Statham Guy Ritchie movie. Like that movie to me is like the epitome of like dude revenge story, right? And most of the time in that movie, until the very end, where they're doing like the full blown assault on the depot, like every person he shoots, he doesn't even break a sweat. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like that's this whole vibe of this whole movie, or like the series. Which how have you guys seen the Netflix series, The Gentlemen?
I'm three episodes in. It's fantastic.
So it's incredible.
It is
good. If you like the movie The Gentleman, you will love the show The Gentleman.
Huh.
It's great. And also The Gentleman is an excellent movie. But you know why it's an excellent movie? Because it's cool. Like, it's a cool, funny movie. And like, Guy Ritchie, when Guy Ritchie is on, he is super on, right? Like, he knows what he can do. He works with people he likes to work with. You guys know what his next project is, by the way?
No. What is it?
It's a project with Issa Gonzalez, Henry Cavill, and Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, fuck yeah.
So the guys, Gyllenhaal and Cavill, are extractors trying to get out Issa Gonzalez because she's a female or a hostage negotiator that got stuck behind enemy lines. So, like, I just know that movie's going to rule, all right? Like, don't you just know how awesome it's going to be?
No, I mean,
didn't he just do The Covenant? Like, that was, I mean,
yeah, The Covenant was the most recent movie, right?
It's not too dissimilar. So, yep. And that was, yeah, we were very, very positive on that one.
Yeah, I love that.
That was the more serious side of Guy Ritchie, though.
True.
Wait, listen, excellent movie. You know, but most of his movies fall somewhere in the middle, right? And that's and that's great for us, you know.
Because
I mean, that'll be the third time that him and Cavill have worked together, and the second time for Gyllenhaal. So like, he's expanding his group of dudes to work with to get even better dudes, and that's awesome.
I wonder if Guy Ritchie and Henry Cavill play Warhammer together.
I bet you they do.
God damn it!
Does Guy Ritchie play War? Let's find out.
God damn it!
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, listen, Henry Cavill definitely plays Warhammer.
He definitely does.
That's true.
I understand what you're saying, Grayson, about how the unseriousness of it at times. But I think that's the movie that this is trying. I think that's exactly what this movie is trying to be, though. I think that, you know, it's, I think it's identifiable in the movie's B plot, the other A plot. It's confusing on like the importance of what else is going on in this film, right? But it's like the fact that there's not too much that happens there besides like the explanation of why there aren't more soldiers about. I think that kind of shows like how deep this movie wants to go with being like a serious film versus a fun film. The other piece of it is you mentioned like, the fact that they don't shoot them while they're all standing there with guns. There's also something to be said about, you know, when, you know, like the whole argument is, you know, knife versus gun within like a certain like range. And I can't remember his name, you know, our Swedish friend, he is very much in everyone's face the entire time he's on screen. So it's like, I don't know when they'd have like some chances to do so, but I think the movie isn't going for serious. I think it's purposefully going for that fun factor that like it's trying to capture. I think it captures it well. I like it. Well, I like it for that.
I also kind of fault this movie for a lot of the same reasons I faulted Inglourious Basterds. Is why make this a funny? Why not just make this a serious movie? It's got a very serious matter. It's got a very serious content matter to deal with. Why make it kind of a joke? You know, I understand there's like a weird, it's kind of like a lighter tone to this one than most war films, I'll give you. Well, but I mean, it's I don't know. It's just
I have what I think is a good answer to that. You know, it's a statement that I make regarding a bunch of movies all the time.
Fun matters. Like,
fun matters. Absolutely fun matters. And it's because like, and I listen, this is not a knock on Henry Cavill, right? But like, Henry Cavill to me is more enjoyable to watch in a less serious role. And I'm not saying that he can't be serious, because there are definitely times and definite matters where he absolutely can be dead serious and it works. But like with his kind of personality, which is like, he's a fun guy and like, he's really fucking charismatic. And it shows when he's doing things he likes to do. Like, one of my favorite movies with Henry Cavill, it's also a Guy Ritchie movie, is A Man from U.N.C.L.E. Have you guys ever watched that movie?
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah.
That movie, you know, is based off the old TV show. I understand that. Is a very good, like, spy era movie.
Well, think about Cavill's interaction with the prince. Right, like in this film, like that doesn't feel like Henry Cavill's character that he's playing. That feels like Henry Cavill, right? Yeah. Like
he's like, man, weren't you on the wall at my school?
he's just like, you know, shaking his head, you know, they're just broing out.
Yeah.
And that very much feels like, you know, not so much of a, like, you know, that's his character's direction. That's the Cavill direction, I feel. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. There is, you know, there's times where he's fine as, like, you know, in like a serious role, but I do believe that he does have kind of a sheen or a shine when he gets to just have fun with something, because that's what's happening in this whole movie, I think.
I think you can distinctly tell when he likes the role that he's in, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
which well, is like, I guess, you know, to kind of round it out, too. Like, he's, like, in this film, he's having a good time, and you can tell, but at the same time, it's like, don't you want that kind of energy on your set when you're, like, doing a movie like this?
We
have plenty of serious World War II era films. Like, we have plenty of them. I think that the more lighthearted ones don't come around as, you know, nearly as often. And sometimes you need that for that time period, right? Like, you need that in, like, you know, for someone who is an enthusiast of that time era, or even the people that aren't interested in that time era. I think it works for both ends of that spectrum. I think that, you know, we have plenty of those. You know, you want to you go watch All Quiet on the Western Front, you know, or you can watch this, you know, two very different films and feels, but, you know, you like, they depict certain like moments in time just in, like, in their own ways.
I think Saving Private Ryan is probably a more apt movie than, because the other ones was World War One.
Well, I mean, you only pick the most decorated World War II. No,
but I'm saying there's a difference. There's also a difference in, like, the tonalities of the two war. I mean, one of the war was a war of ideologies, and one is literally has pure evil in it.
Yeah.
So no, I see what you're saying, though, Chris, and maybe I'm thinking of a little. Maybe I'm being too pinky up about it, which I can admit. Sure. Which I think, you know, it's funny given, because Henry Cavill's character in this would have just taken that one and run with it too. But I do think the movie works, and I think it works well is what it's doing, especially telling the story it's telling. I mean, especially if it was just declassified in 2016, which means that, I mean, it's only been known for less than 10 years. They've already made a movie, which would have taken a year, year and a half from start to finish. So, I mean, like, start of like, oh, we have a script now. It's, you know. So it's not too much time in between, but I do like stories like this that are very not well-known stories that kind of come out of that era too. And like something you said earlier, Chris, about like, and what you, Roger, I think you accentuated when you said fun matters, is I do also think there's something to, when you're watching, for instance, you're watching our guys just hack their way through a bunch of Nazis, is like, who cares? They're Nazis.
Yeah, fuck them.
You know what I mean? Because the movie doesn't do anything to distinguish the German from the Nazi, which some movies do, and but this isn't one of those movies, and it's fine. Because it's just, when I watch Alan Ritchson's character hack his way through that room full of guys with the axe, and then when he gets to the other end of the door and he can see Art and he sees the two other heroes looking at him, he just smiles and waves with the axe. Like, I thought that was pretty funny. I laughed uproariously at that. And I'm sure
just a crazy person. And they do crazy person things.
He's a crazy Swedish man.
One thing I didn't know and I hope this is true because the movie doesn't really say it's believed, is the James Bond reference I thought was pretty fucking cool too.
Well, they do put it at the end of the movie. I don't know if you saw that. They're mm-hmm. pretty sure that that's who, with Ian Fleming being there, that that's who. It was James Bond was based off of, which that's pretty badass. Honestly.
Yeah. That's why he's there, right? I think is to accentuate that whole.
And of course, no one misses that reference, right? In the beginning, when he's like,
I didn't miss it as soon as they said what his name was.
Yeah, I'm Fleming, like, Ian Fleming. Yeah, of course, like Bond, James Bond. Yeah, of course. That's that's pretty cool though too, to think that. And I have a question that I'll pose at the end, because it's the last line of the film is, you know, they work. I want to know, like, where are we going with that? But that's in the future, but or just at the end of the episode here. But I do. We have a lot to talk about before that. But so let's talk about some of the other cast members the other characters and what they're doing is. How do you guys feel about the characters chosen to do to fill out this story? I think it's a very specific reason.
I think it's a fun group. I mean, obviously, we already talked to Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, but like Isa Gonzalez, like, I mean, she's good in just about everything that she's in. Mm-hmm. Very, very well to do actress. Like, she's perfect for this role. But like, dude, Mr. Heron, old Babs, Monken. Like every so like, you know, obviously we've seen him in a couple of Guy Ritchie things before. I don't know he does much besides his stuff, but like that dude's awesome.
Yeah.
Like he just that dude is cool. Like cool, cool. And then I mean, look, we got Till Schweiger there, somebody I haven't seen in like 10 years. To be the, you know, the ultimate Nazi bad guy because, you know, the world needs Nazi bad guys all the time.
Wasn't he a Nazi bad guy before? Yes, too?
He was a Nazi good guy. Yeah, he was the guy.
That's like, right. Okay.
Yeah. Say auf Wiedersehen, you Nazi balls.
Yeah, those
yeah. Yeah, from Inglourious Basterds. Yep. He's like, how do you feel about going pro? We admire your work.
such a good line.
God damn it.
It is. And look, wasn't that delivered by Brad Pitt? I think that was Brad Pitt line. Yeah,
that's He's like, we're big fans of your work at the amateur level. How do you feel about going professional?
Yeah, I agree. I was happy to see him in the role he's in. He does a fantastic job. Every time I see that guy, I'm like, oh, it's the guy from Inglourious Basterds. Mm-hmm. Even movies that are before Inglourious Basterds, oh, it's the guy from Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. But I think he works very well here, especially. And I wonder if there's probably a dozen, like him and Thomas Kretschmann, and there's always guys that like, they just happen to play Nazis all the time. wonder if they're like, if there's a list of people to call. I wonder if they're just on.
How many times have we made that joke? It's like, I got my own suit.
Yeah, but okay, so here's the thing. Is there just like a list of people to call? I think when you want like someone to play the iconic Nazi, I think you want that to be believable, right? So there are guys that have proven to fucking do it, right? So that's probably a piece of that. It's like, you know, hey, you know, that guy in that movie, like, I think that was really like that felt like menacing and like evil to me. Let's get him in here. You know what I mean? I think there's some truth to that.
Hey, same joke I've made 20 times is, listen, those checks cash just the same, brother.
Of course, brother. Yeah. Of course they do. So let me ask another question, too, something I've been wondering since I watched it. Mm-hmm. As I was leaving, a woman behind me, talking to, I think, her husband, said, I don't like it.
No, this is a dude movie. I didn't say I wish I was watching it with my wife. I wish I was watching it with you guys. You know what I mean?
Is, like, what is there? I disagreed with the 57. You don't know which way, though. But I also don't understand how you can watch this movie and not have enjoyed it as much as you were expected to.
Yeah.
You know, is that a weird question to ask?
No, I mean, I understand it because, like, look. When I hear somebody say they don't like it, my immediate knee-jerk reaction is, why not? Like, give me something specific that you didn't enjoy. Was it the fact that the good guys win? Or was it too much fun? Or did it look too awesome?
Are you upset that the Nazis didn't prevail?
Yeah,
what's the pro side of the argument for the Nazis?
What did you think was going to happen?
this may be a question of your character, not so much the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, true, true. But I didn't hear the rest of the conversation. But
that is something I'd be interested in. Because, I mean, like, look, obviously this movie's not a perfect movie, you know, and I understand that. But it is fun. It does have a likable cast and it's a true story. So it's like, you can't even be like, ah, they never did that. Sure. Maybe they didn't do everything the movie has because it's a fucking movie, but like, what's to not like here?
I agree with you. But I feel like that's kind of the Guy Ritchie effect too, is you're also smart enough to know what you have in Henry Cavill if he's cast, and like that silly but amazing mustache he has, and all those close-ups he had with the like, it all part of the same element here, I think.
I'll counter that slightly, and you know, I'm actually going to talk about my or excuse me going to talk against myself for a second here, but hear me out, right? So like, we the three of us together like absolutely adored the Covenant movie, right?
It
was an excellent movie, like, hell yeah, very serious, like, you know, point A to point B, this movie was awesome. Like, but I could see why somebody wouldn't like that movie, right? Like, I could absolutely see, like, somebody's like, you know what, it's too gritty, a little bit too violent for me, you know, it's not a fun movie to watch, because like, look, it's not, right? It was graphic and brutal, and you know, it was everything a war movie is sometimes.
I can see why somebody would say that they wouldn't like that movie. Okay. Which I think is a better movie than this, by the way. But then to see this movie, which is like the complete opposite, the other side of the spectrum for a war movie, where, you know, it's like kind of a comedy, kind of an action hero movie, and has a big, huge cast instead of just two guys fighting it out through the mountains, has, you know, like some very recognizable A-list movie stars in it, and is funny. I just don't see why that would be something that you wouldn't be like, hey, you know, I kind of dug that movie, right?
Well, okay, so I hear everything you're saying, and I agree with you, but I think it might be a simpler solve than what than thinking about it.
Okay,
that guy probably wanted to see that movie. He probably drug his wife to see that movie.
His wife did not
want to. She was like, "This is fucking stupid." And he's the whole time going, "No, this movie's fucking awesome."
He's just belly laughing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, she probably didn't want to be there. Most people don't go to the movies alone. And like, you know, it was his turn to pick the movie, and she's staring at, you know, whatever movie she wants to see. And he's like, he goes, "I want to go see that one." And she's like, "Son of a bitch." And like, you know, like, it probably wasn't her choice. That might be all it is.
Like, was Henry Golding not handsome enough for you?
Sure. What were all the people in here not beautiful enough for you, lady? It's right. Always look at. Like, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm conflicted. I just want to bring this up briefly, is Alan Ritchson's involvement is why it's not making a ton of money where he sits politically. I don't think that has anything.
No. This movie's not making a ton of money because the same reason why, you know, a few other movies like this. So it's a guy movie. Yep. This isn't a date night movie. You're not going to get a whole bunch of couples out to see this movie. This is a one or two tickets. You know, this isn't the 1.5 tickets per like advertising dollar, right? This is one ticket because it's either some guy goes and sees this alone, or a guy calls a buddy or their brother and goes, "Hey man, you want to go see that movie, Henry Cavill?" They're like, "Fuck yeah!" You know, like, that's how you're getting tickets to this film sold. It isn't, you're not bringing the family, you're not bringing, you know, the girlfriend, the wife, whatever. It's just like, dude, seeing this movie is all this is.
Yeah, but you also wouldn't take your girlfriend or wife to, I mean, not necessarily, you could, to like a movie like Saving Private Ryan, an example I used earlier.
Fun date movie.
Whole different time. Whole different premise, but like, I mean, but you also wouldn't take him to, I mean, is that a guy movie, or is that just,
so it is a guy.
I don't think it's a guy movie, though. Not like this is.
It's, you want to go to exactly make out while we watch Saving Private Ryan. So I'm sorry, like, I have an old reference for a second, but have you guys ever seen the Seinfeld episode where Jerry takes his date to see Schindler's List?
Yeah.
And they end up making out, and like, some of the people in the audience are like, the crowd were like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah,
but yeah, like, it's really kind of that kind of vibe that I get from that statement.
Yep.
Chris, you were saying, sorry.
No. I think that sums it up pretty good, actually.
Well, I don't know. It's always just it's hard for me to. I hate it when I start seeing the articles of why this movie's not making money. I mean, I just hate those articles because it's all just hearsay and theoretical anyway. No, I mean. Yeah,
Even if it's hearsay and theoretical, I think it's just more obvious than people want to talk about for some reason. And I don't know why we're not past, you know, why we can't get past that, you know, whole, hey, this might not be for everybody and that's okay kind of deal. But I don't know. People have to justify why things don't make money to their investors, not to their audience. So,
sure. I mean, one last thing I'll say about what does and doesn't make money, just in a broad sweeping thing, is like, I'm pretty good. And like, I'm not trying to like toot my own horn here, but I'm pretty decent about knowing what movies are going to make some money. Like, we've been doing this long enough that I have a pretty good sense for it most of the time. I didn't really think that this movie was going to be a big deal in any real capacity. And look, I'm excited and I'm happy we watched this movie because I enjoyed it very much, right? I still, even after watching it, I understand it ain't going to make a bunch of money. It's just unfortunate, like, that's the only real metric that we get sometimes for how a movie is successful.
Yeah, like a movie
success. Because like, this movie is going to thrive on some streaming platform. It's going to thrive
there. Oh yeah. Some guy's gonna wife falls asleep like in bed, guy's flicking through streaming services stuff, and he sees this, he's turning it on.
Yeah, like, you know, easily. At the end of July when this hits Netflix.
Yeah.
You know? Because it probably will, because that's where Guy Ritchie's other stuff is right now. Mm-hmm, so
yeah.
But yeah,
that's not a bad call. I always wonder why we do that. And even if we can consider box office as strong a metric as we used to be able to, because that used to be the only metric, and now it's not the only metric. But
it's not.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing to me to see a movie with this big of a cast not getting more ticket sales and seats. It's strange to me because it should. I mean, I always have that stance, so I'm not the right person to ask about this, because I think everyone should see every movie, and I think you should go pay for it and watch it in the theater. And that's obviously not how most people want to do things, and I'm a little different about that. But my opinion could be a little skewed. I'm trying to see the other side of it. It's just sometimes hard for me because it's hard for me to see that because I'm a movie guy, and like I watch anything. But I'm a little weirded out. This movie's not doing better money. It's a decent war movie with a decent cast.
Oh yeah,
that's the last thing I'll say about that before. I don't want to harp on that over and over again, but I strongly believe that, and I think for it to not be making, that means word of mouth isn't getting around. For whatever reason, it's just not.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? You know, I can be disappointed when a movie doesn't make money, but it ain't my job to market things.
True. Like,
they marketed it to me. I'm still, you know, I'm peak demographic. And I went and saw it. And here's the thing. I probably would have been excited to see this if we didn't have a movie podcast. Like, I'd have been like, hell yeah. You know, Superman and Jack Reacher getting together to beat up some Nazis. Let's do it. Superman, right? Reacher.
I mean, not anymore. Not Superman anymore. No mo.
Yeah, I mean, listen, until I see somebody else in that role, you know, on screen. True.
That's true, I guess.
I know they are working on that movie now, by the way.
Superman, yep, yeah, it is. It is almost done being shot, actually.
Production.
Yep. In Ohio.
Yeah, because that's where Superman's from. We all know that.
That's our neck of the woods.
Smallville, Kansas, Ohio.
Fair. What about you, Chris? Roger and I have been doing a lot of talking lately. What are some of your thoughts on the matter?
Oh, no. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think I said my piece on where we're at right now. But, like, it all comes down to, you know, why it's important to you that a movie does well or doesn't do well, right? I don't think we ever want something to not do well. I don't think we've ever walked into something and said, I hope that movie bombs. Well, maybe a couple times. I think I did say that. But, like, you know, generally, we want them all to be successful, right? So it's like, but we all have our reasons. Like, Grayson, you kind of talk about how, you know, like, you know, you'd like to see the death of the movie theater avoided. And I agree with that. Sure. But at the same time, it's like, you know, someone may not like, you know, the whole World War II era films, and they're happy when this thing doesn't make a lot of money because, you know, maybe they got family that was in World War II or something else that kind of makes them feel that way. And they're just like,
I understand that. I really understand that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can understand. So it's kind of an emotional thing for some people. Not as much as it was, I think, 20 years ago for the sheer amount of people it would have been. But yeah, I can certainly see that kind of a sore spot for some people. Some families ended, you know, in that time period, it's just what it is. But
sure,
a lot of families in Europe, I guess, would have been decimated by this. Yeah, I mean, the whole European continent was pretty much torn apart by this awful conflict.
But this movie was fun to watch the opposite.
Yeah, so. That's the thing is, I agree that I keep coming back to in my head, I enjoyed the shit out of watching this movie because it's fun.
Yep.
And they did this weird dance where you kind of flirt back and forth between between fun and serious, and like which one on the screen sometimes. Sometimes they're super serious, sometimes they're kind of fun. And it's like the opening scene, for instance, with them in the water, with them in the boat. Like that's a perfect example of what you're going to get.
Yep.
I think that's as important a scene as any in this movie because it really sets it up well. And I mean, I think everyone in that scene, it's one of the biggest infringers of the why don't they just shoot them? There's 20 of them, and there's three of our guys. Why didn't they just shoot them? But on the same token, like I don't ask the questions until I'm done watching the movie. Yeah, why didn't they just shoot them? So,
yeah.
But I do think that's important too. And it's even how like the text fills up the whole, it's like after he slices that dude's neck and he's like, and it's like the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. It's like, it's filled up the entire screen. And then like next preceding that or next following that is him having the dead corpse of the guy whose neck he cut waving at the Nazi boat.
Yeah. No, and then as they train their large caliber weapon at them.
Yeah.
It's like, he's getting closer. You know what? And this will be the last thing I say before we get into score in here. One thing that I thought was very funny is when they're on the outside of the going around Africa there and they get run down by that destroyer.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, the British one.
Yeah, the British one. And they're talking to him. And Anders is talking to him in Swedish. And he's like, oh, no, not you, Lawson. He goes, I want to hear March Phillips say it in Swedish because he knows who he is.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, all right, you got me.
Oh, geez.
What's a girl to do?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. The Admiral's just like, just shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Get out of the water, idiots.
Yeah, just shut up, you moron.
We're boarding you now. Get out of our way.
Yeah,
yeah, that's it. I did enjoy that quite a bit.
Yeah.
But from looking at things you do get well choreographed battle. You get, you know, a couple small ones and some well choreographed fight scenes. You do get, you know, you do get the, for those people going to watch the war aspect of this, you are getting Allied forces battling, you know, Axis power German forces. You are mm-hmm. getting authentic German uniforms. You're getting, you know, someone who is a pretty believable, authentic, you know, awful Nazi. You are getting all the things that I think people expect out of a movie like this.
Yep.
It's just different. Same with the King Arthur, the Guy Ritchie King Arthur is like, as much as I wanted that movie to be different, it was okay. And it was a Guy Ritchie King Arthur movie. And judging how, I mean, based on the fact that Guy Ritchie made it, how mad can I be at the final product I got?
Yeah, we don't really talk about that.
Well, I don't hate that movie. It's just, I would have thought a big budget King Arthur movie made by a British director would have been more about the guy instead of this weird other thing that he'd probably make with Charlie Hunnam. But this is exactly what I expected coming out of Guy Ritchie, and I'm here for it because, and I'll tell you why, is I tend to put it more in the, like, if we're going like thumbs up and thumbs down camp, I tend to put this in the thumbs up camp.
Sure. Because
I do think it's a success. It does accomplish what it sets out to accomplish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I agree.
You know, a lot of people like me, they're complaining about things they didn't get. They're, you know, but like they didn't make the movie, nor did they have any input. Like, it's just, you know, you're doing that thing, Roger, that you hate of like trying to interject what you want into what you didn't get.
To make a movie that you didn't get to see.
Exactly. So I totally understand that. But I'm very happy with this movie. I don't see why you'd be upset going in. I just can't quite figure that out. But when I wanted to come back to you, if we're going to move the score, let's talk about the ending for 1 second then. Mm-hmm. I thought that was that could have been awful too when Churchill's talking about they work for me now. And then like all the food's coming in and he's talking about how, you know, well, if the British would have picked you up, you'd have been thrown in prison. If the Germans would have got you, you'd have been tortured beyond belief. And then he's like, but we're just going to let you go now because now the Americans are in the fight and that's what we wanted the whole time.
Yep.
So, and then he's like, they work for me now. So are we, I mean, if this movie had done like a $75 million opening weekend, would we be getting a sequel to this?
I think, I don't know if we would for sure, but I think it would definitely be something that wouldn't be too far out of the cards.
Does Guy Ritchie do sequels?
I mean, he's doing Aladdin 2.
Yeah, God.
He didn't make Aladdin 1, did he?
Yeah,
yes, he did, actually.
Oh, did he? Okay, never mind.
Action Aladdin. Yes, he did.
You know, it's funny. Until Roger said it, I was like, oh, yeah, he did do the live-action Aladdin.
Live action Aladdin.
Yes, he did. He does
because he did the Sherlock Holmes movies.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, with Downey and
Jude
Law. He did both of them. Or is there three of them? There's two of them.
Game of Shadows and they did quite a few. But yeah, no, I think I could see a sequel to that. And it wouldn't be hard because like how many hundreds and thousands of unsanctioned off the books missions were pulled by both sides in a conflict like World War II that the general public will never know about.
Yep. You know, it's probably like, for the best that we don't.
Well, I'm sure.
Let's just be honest.
I'm sure, but I'm a little sad we're not going to get a sequel to this because it's one of those things. I enjoyed it immensely, and I just think it works because of Guy Ritchie as the director. I just think it works better than it should have in the first place. So,
sure.
I'll score it going in first then.
Oh, good.
This is, to me, it's a 6. I can recommend this to anybody, anyone who's willing to, you know, hear me out why I'm recommending it. But I think this movie's very enjoyable for the hardcore history nerd or the someone who's like, I don't really know much about World War II, but you know, I dig it anyway. That's fine. I thought this movie was very enjoyable. I thought it was well written. I thought the performances were pretty excellent. I actually really kind of dig this, so I'm giving it a 6.
Nice,
Chris, you or me, buddy?
I'll go next. So I'm right with Grayson. This movie's a six. It's fun. It's like the movie shines absolutely when the action is happening. Like that's this movie's bread and butter. There's a lot of stuff happening to build up to all that. There's a lot of moving parts, and there's like a plan that goes through. It feels very much like a murder fest movie into a heist movie with murder involved, and sure. It does it really well. And I think that if anyone asks me if they should see it, I will look at them and say, "Are you going with your girlfriend or are you going with your boys?" Because the answer is yes. But, you know, one is going to be more miserable afterwards for you than the other. So
I'm actually going a little bit higher than you guys. Mm-hmm. I was giving this movie a 7, and I'm going to stick to it.
Yeah.
Like, to me, there's nothing about this movie that doesn't make it an enjoyable movie for me personally. Now, look, I'm not going to be going out of my way and be like, this movie's not for everybody. This movie's for anybody who wants to see a Guy Ritchie World War II movie, right? Like, if that's not something that's on your radar, this probably... you know, really isn't in your wheelhouse. But for like us, I mean, this is a fun movie, has a good cast, and is, you know, is a nice solid 2-hour movie, right? Like from start to finish, you know, you're getting what you're getting, and like it works for me. I know that I would definitely watch the sequel to this movie, but I tend to watch all the Guy Ritchie stuff. Did you know this is Guy Ritchie's 6th movie since 2019?
Jeez, he's working.
He is
well, and he's got another one coming in January.
What are the 6 movies from 2019? Aladdin, what else?
So Aladdin, obviously this movie.
Wrath of Man.
The Gentleman, Man, The Covenant, and Operation Fortune, Rouge de Guerre.
Oh, yeah, we didn't watch that, but that's
one we never talked about.
That's Jason Statham, though, and someone else. It's not another big name, but yeah, that's one that's on streaming. I might check that out.
Yep.
Oh, that's Oscar Isaac. I think it's Oscar Isaac, isn't it? So
yeah, there's 6 big movies there. Oh, yeah, Aladdin, Gentleman, Wrath of Man, Operation Fortune, The Covenant, and Ungentlemanly Warfare. So listen, Guy Ritchie's got the time and the money to do it, so he'll do it. And he has 4 things in production now.
What are they besides Aladdin 2?
Well, the one that he's finishing up, the one that we talked about already with Isa Gonzalez, Cavill, and Gyllenhaal. And I actually lost it, so I'm not going to look it up.
Okay.
But yeah, so he's got a couple other things in there as well. And here's the thing. Not only does he have 6 movies, he has a full Netflix TV show or show for The Gentleman as well. So,
which, by the way, Chris, I think you'd really love it.
If you like The Gentleman. Did you watch The Gentleman, Chris?
I have seen The Gentleman, yeah.
Yeah, so if you like that, it's good. It's very good. I enjoyed it.
It's just more of that. And that's
which is yes.
Yeah, I don't know what I expect coming from a Guy Ritchie movie anymore. I mean, I think it's one of those movies, like, he peaked so early in his career with some of those, like, didn't he do, like, Lock, Stock, and Smoking Barrels?
Rock and Roller.
Snatch. Yeah. I think Snatch is, like, one of his, you know, that's
Snatch
always,
is one of my, that's one of my favorite movies ever.
That is Guy Ritchie, right? Snatch?
Yeah.
It's got a very famous editing scene with the rabbit, too. But, yeah, I think he's one of the pikey. I think he's one of those ones that he just, you never quite know what you're getting with Guy Ritchie, but you always know there's going to be a solid quality bar. And the production value is going to be high, which I appreciate. Because, I mean, that's more than Netflix gives us. And I mean that seriously. It is. I don't mean that to make Roger laugh. I mean, I do mean that seriously. And, like, Netflix is – some movies we watch, there's no way that they give any kind of a crap about the movie. They just – it just isn't. Some of the products we watch, it's so hard to sometimes watch a movie that one of those zeros that we gave – and like, they just didn't put any time or effort into this movie. They just—it's a made by AI, to be honest with you. But some of them, but I just put this against most Netflix weekly releases, and this comes out far ahead every time. And I just, Chris, I know you're rolling your eyes right now. I can feel it. But
no, I understand the point you're making. I'm not going to say Netflix has quality that people don't think about. No, Netflix, you know, shoves as much into the funnel as it can, and sometimes good things come out the other end. I think that's their whole business model.
Yeah, that's probably, I've thought that for a long time. Yeah, but yeah. Okay, so 2 6s and a 7 is not a bad score, actually.
No, it was a good showing.
Yep.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for joining me this evening. This has been episode 380A of For the Cinema, a movie podcast. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday morning at 5 a.m. on the podcast service of your choice. Of the following 6, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and YouTube. Please bear with us. I know we didn't post a B episode last week. we're going to have one this coming week, but the week after we also won't. We're doing kind of a weird transition talking about shows and what's going to come, what's going to happen next. So bear with us.
We're working on things.
We're working on things.
Doing like weird stuff.
Doing weird podcast stuff. Please leave a comment or two.
Stuff in quotations.
Please leave a comment or two, rate, subscribe. Every little bit helps. More importantly, thank you very much for listening. Check out the show on Twitter at Love Cinema Pod. I'm at Grayson Maxwell 1.
I am at Roger Stillian.
I'm Christopher Bond.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook. Always posting new news stories there, as well as other social media. And send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. Next week, we're going to be taking a look at Challengers, and we're going to be talking about our most anticipated for summer of 2024, starting the beginning of May, going till the end of August.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah, brother.
Yes.